You see, Roger, all you need is a toupee, and you
Yeah,
look just like that guy.
that's right. Really. Hello, everyone. That's the first thing people hear. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul. And tonight we are going to continue our study on paper 182. Let me hit this and I'll tell you what page it's on.
162.
162. We're in the second section, paragraph 3, and that's on page 1791 in the original book.
Okay.
And 162.23 on the rest of it. All right, so that's pretty good. Wonder what happened to you. Okay, so let's get started. I'll start out reading tonight. And then said another inquirer, Jesus, teacher, we do look for the Messiah, but when he comes, we know that his appearance will be in mystery. We know hence you are, whence you are. You have been among your brethren from the beginning. The deliverer will come in power to restore the throne of David's kingdom. Do you really claim to be the Messiah? And Jesus replies, now, listen to this closely, y'all. You claim to know me and to know whence I came. I wish your claims were true, for indeed, then would you find abundant life in that knowledge. But I declare that I have not come to you for myself. I have been sent by the Father, and he who sent me is true and faithful. By refusing to hear me, you are refusing to receive him who sends me. And if you will receive this gospel, you shall know him who sent me. I know the Father, for I have come from the Father to declare and reveal him to you. And of course, what's he talking about? He's talking about all the prophets that thought they knew when the Messiah was coming and everything, and they expected this Messiah to just appear. They didn't expect somebody to come like Jesus that was born of a woman, and that he has not informed them that he has had six lives before this, six bestowals before this, that he does declare that he is from God. So because these people have a lack of understanding of what the prophets was trying to tell them, they're just going to discount Jesus all the way, you know, because they knew where he came from, Nazareth, right? They didn't know he was born in Bethlehem, but they knew he grew up in Nazareth. So they're basically just discounting him out because he doesn't exactly fit what they think the Messiah should be when he gets here. All
Hey,
right.
Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. All right, Diane.
The agents of the scribes wanted to lay hands upon him, but they feared the multitude, for many believed in him. Jesus' work since his baptism had become well known to all Jewry. And as many of these people recounted these things, they said among themselves, even though this teacher is from Galilee, and even though he does not meet all of our expectations of the Messiah, we wonder if the deliverer, when he does come, will really do anything more wonderful than this Jesus of Nazareth has already done.
Yeah. Basically saying, you know, some of them believe in him regardless. Let me show y'all something too. I wanted to show y'all something from this picture if I can. You notice all these guys over here to the left? Yes.
Sanhedrin.
Yeah, the Sanhedrin. Notice how none of them are happy.
Yeah.
So this is a very bad thing to them, and the people behind them seem to be enjoying themselves, but all the scribes and Pharisees are very unhappy that he's there. All right. Okay, let's see here. Rodney, would you take the next one?
When the Pharisees and their agents heard the people talking
This way, they took counsel with their leaders and decided something should be done forthwith to put a stop to these public appearances of Jesus in the temple courts. The leaders of the Jews, in general, were disposed to avoid a clash with Jesus, believing that the Roman authorities had promised him immunity. They could not otherwise account for his boldness in coming at this time to Jerusalem. But the officers of the Sanhedrin did not wholly believe this rumor. They reasoned that the Roman rulers would not do such a thing secretly and without the knowledge of the highest governing body of the Jewish nation.
And they were right, weren't they? Because they were always getting paid off by the Jewish Sanhedrin, so they wouldn't do anything behind their back because that would jeopardize them getting their little money on the side, right? So they were quite a quandary, weren't they? All right, Pam, would you take the next,
Yeah.
please?
Accordingly, Eber, the proper officer of the Sanhedrin, with two assistants, was dispatched to arrest Jesus. As Eber made his way toward Jesus, the master said, "Fear not to approach me. Draw near while you listen to my teaching. I know you have been sent to apprehend me, but you should understand that nothing will befall the Son of Man until his hour comes. You are not arrayed against me. You come only to do the bidding of your masters, and even these rulers of the Jews
Barely.
verily think they are doing God's service when they secretly seek my destruction."
So these officers that he sent, they figured that they didn't accept the fact that he just bravely looked at them and said, "Come on forward so you can hear the teachings," right?
Yeah.
They wanted him to hear it too. But he knew that he was not going to be arrested on this trip to Jerusalem, didn't he? So he was bold to confront them head on, and that took them aback because they weren't expecting that from him. They figured he would cower down and they'd be able to arrest him. The other thing is, too, y'all got to remember, this is during the Feast of the Tabernacles, and the city was just full of people celebrating the Feast of the Tabernacles. So really, the Sanhedrin was kind of afraid of an uprising of those who believed in Jesus. And if that happened, then the Romans would have to step in, wouldn't they? And that's the last thing in the world they wanted. So, lot of background behind this. Stephanie, would you like to take the next one, please?
Sure. "I bear none of you ill will. The Father loves you, and therefore I long for your deliverance from the bondage of prejudice and the darkness of tradition. I offer you the liberty of life and the joy of salvation. I proclaim the new and living way, the deliverance from evil and the breaking of the bondage of sin. I have come that you might have life and have it eternally. You seek to be rid of me and my disquieting teachings. If you could only realize that I am to be with you only a little while. In just a short time, I go to him who sent me into this world. And then will many of you diligently seek me, but you shall not discover my presence, for where I am about to go, you cannot come. But all who truly seek to find me shall sometime attain the life that leads to my Father's presence."
So he's telling them that he knows his short time is short, and where he's going after that, they're not prepared to go yet, are they? So, it's a big, big deal to them. He's trying to offer them a way out too. Andrew, would you take the next one?
Yes. "Some of the scoffers said among themselves, 'Where will this man go that we cannot find him? Will he go to live among the Greeks? Will he destroy himself? What can he mean when he declares that soon he will depart from us and that we cannot go where he goes?"
This all ties back into Jesus's foreknowledge, doesn't it? And this is
This is part of his divinity that he knew this was coming. So, he tries to curtail this as much as he can, but he knows pretty much down to the date and hour when this is going to happen. So, nothing's going to surprise him. Oh my goodness. Look how small this one is. Let me see if I can fix this
Where's
real quick.
Gary?
He's not here today. He's not going to be here today. Let me see if I can make this a tad bigger, y'all. That is not going to work, is it? No, then we can't read it.
Oh, looks good.
Yeah, but it cuts off the bottom half.
Well, then we've ripped
That's
the
a little
end.
better, isn't it? Yes. Okay. Let me see which version of this I can see the best. Let me try this one down here close to me, y'all. Actually, give me a second. Let me put my glasses on here. This is my just in case of emergency glasses. If I could see at them, it'd help. Fingerprints. That's a little better. Okay, Abner and his assistants refused to arrest Jesus. Eber and his assistants refused to arrest Jesus. They returned to their meeting place without him. When, therefore, the chief priests and the Pharisees upbraided Eber and his assistants because they upbraided Eber and their assist his assistants because they had not brought Jesus with them. Eber only replied, "We feared to arrest him in the midst of the multitude because many believed in him. Besides, we never heard a man speak like this man. There is something out of the ordinary about this teacher. You would all do well to go over to hear him." Well, I bet they love that. And when the chief rulers heard these words, they were astonished and spoke tauntingly to Eber. "Are you also led astray? Are you about to believe in this deceiver? Have you heard that any of our learned men or any of the rulers have believed in him?" And actually, they were. Have any of the scribes or Pharisees been deceived by his clever teachings? How does it come that you are influenced by the behavior of this ignorant multitude who know not the law or the prophets? Do you not know that such untaught people are accursed. And then answered Eber, "Even so, my masters, but this man speaks with the multitude words of mercy and hope. He cheers the downhearted, and his words were comforting even to our souls. What can there be wrong in these teachings, even though he may not be the Messiah of the scriptures? And even then, does not our law requires fairness? Do we condemn a man before we hear him?" And the chiefs of the Sanhedrin was much wrought with Eber, and turning upon him, said, "Have you gone mad? Are you by any chance also from Galilee? Search the scriptures, and you will discover that out of Galilee arises no prophets, much less the Messiah." Now I'm gonna say something interesting here, y'all, that y'all might want to hear, but the Urantia book in the next couple hundred years, maybe 500 years, people are going to take things out of it out of context, just like they did in the scriptures back then. Okay. So sometime in the future, they'll be taking the things in the Urantia book out of context, and there'll be groups of people calling each other idiots and morons and all sorts of things because they don't agree with their interpretation of what the Urantia book says. All right. So even in Jesus's day, they did that very same thing. And Diane has a real big one here.
The Sanhedrin disbanded in confusion, and Jesus withdrew to Bethany for the night. Okay, right.
Need to explain that,
I got it.
All right. Why don't you take this next one too, dear? Since you had such a short, yeah.
Three, the woman taken in adultery. It was during this visit to Jerusalem that Jesus dealt with a certain woman of evil repute who was brought into his presence by her accusations, accusers, and his enemies. The distorted record you have of this episode would suggest that this woman had been brought before Jesus by the scribes and the Pharisees, and that Jesus so dwelt with them as to indicate that these religious leaders of the Jews might themselves have been guilty of immorality. Thank you. Jesus well knew that while these scribes and Pharisees were spiritually blind and intellectually prejudiced by the, thank you. I don't know why I'm not talking well enough tonight. By their loyalty to tradition, they were to be numbered among the most I know this is covered here.
Yeah. Go
Okay,
ahead.
thoroughly moral men of that day and generation.
Okay, so in the New Testament, when the story is told, they indicate that this was the scribes and Pharisees that brought this woman before Jesus, and that they were immoral themselves, but that was really not the case. That's not who brought this woman before him. So I'm just trying to clear the record up here. And here's a picture of it. Okay.
Oh, wait, can you go back?
Yeah.
Who is it by?
William DePorter.
Okay. It looks similar to like what Rembrandt would do, but it
Yeah.
was probably, they don't have a date on it.
If it is, it's yeah, there's a date
Oh,
on it, but it's really small.
1790?
You go down
1608 to
13,
1648.
1390. Yeah. 1600. Yeah, you're right. Okay, let's go on. Rodney, I think you're up. Rodney, I'd love to hear, be able to hear you.
Sorry about that.
It's all right.
What really happened was this. Early the third morning of the feast, as Jesus approached the temple, he was met by a group of the hired agents of the Sanhedrin who were dragging a woman along with them. As they came nearer, the spokesman said, "Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now, the law of Moses commands that we should stone such a woman. What do you say should be done with her?"
Oh, yeah.
Notice it says the agents of the Sanhedrin. And remember back then, women were treated like c cattle. They didn't think anything in the world about dragging this woman along, did they? Nothing at all. All right. Pam.
It was the plan of Jesus' enemies, if he upheld the law of Moses requiring that the self-confessed transgressor be stoned, to involve him in difficulty with the Roman rulers, who had denied the Jews the right to inflict the death penalty without the approval of a Roman tribunal. If he forbade stoning the woman, they would accuse him before the Sanhedrin of setting himself above Moses and the Jewish law. If he remained silent, they would accuse him of cowardice. But the master so managed the situation that the whole plot fell to pieces of its own sordid weight.
Okay, so remember the Romans had outlawed the Jews from killing people, right? According to their law, they had to get the approval of the Roman government to do that. So they just couldn't take somebody out and stone her. That's what they're talking about. And they wanted to get Jesus involved with this so the Romans would be against him too. All right.
So if it wasn't for the Roman authority, she'd probably be stoned.
Oh, she would have been stoned to death. Yeah, I'm sure. Whether what, regardless of what Jesus said, if they hadn't have got her now, they would have gotten her later, right? I mean, that's the way they worked. Stephanie, would you take the next one?
This woman, once comely, was the wife of an inferior citizen of Nazareth, a man who had been a troublemaker for Jesus throughout his youthful days. The man, having married this woman, did most shamefully force her to earn their living by making a commerce of her body. He had come up to the feast at Jerusalem that his wife might thus prostitute her physical charms for financial gain. He had entered into a bargain with the hirelings of the Jewish rulers, thus to betray his own wife in her commercialized vice. And so they came with the woman and her companion in transgression for the purpose of ensnaring Jesus into making some statement which could be used against him in case of his arrest.
Okay, this is a pretty lousy person, wasn't it? That would sell off his own wife, and then he's gonna put her up for stoning for money.
It's
Can't get much
disgusting.
lousy than that. Andrew, would you take the next one, please?
Jesus, looking over the crowd, saw her husband standing behind the others. He knew what sort of man he was and perceived that he was a party to the despicable transaction. Jesus first walked around to near where the degenerate husband stood and wrote upon the sand a few words which caused him to depart in haste. Then he came back before the woman and wrote again upon the ground for the benefit of her would-be accusers. And when they read his words, they too went away one by one. And when the master had written in the sand the third time, the woman's companion in evil took his departure, so that when the master raised himself up from this writing, he beheld the woman standing alone before him. Jesus said, "Woman, where are your accusers? Did no man remain to stone you?" And the woman, lifting up her eyes, answered, "No man, Lord." And then said Jesus, "I know about you, neither do I condemn you. Go your way in peace." And this woman, Hildana, forsook her wicked husband and joined herself to the disciples of the kingdom.
Wouldn't you call that a good ending? Yeah.
Yeah,
I wish they would have told us what he wrote.
Yeah, I know. That would have
Yeah.
been interesting, wouldn't it?
It must have been something they were guilty of.
Probably so. All right, the Feast of the Tabernacles. For the Feast of the Tabernacles, the presence of people from all of the known world, from Spain to India, made the Feast of the Tabernacles an ideal occasion for Jesus for the first time publicly to proclaim his full gospel in Jerusalem. At this feast, the people lived much in the open air in leafy booths, and it was the feast of the harvest ingathering and coming, as it did in the cool of the autumn months. It was more generally attended by the Jews of the world than the Passover at the end of the winter, or Pentecost at the beginning of the summer. The apostles at last beheld their masters making the bold announcement on his mission on earth before all the world, as it were. And I bet they were all freaking out too, weren't they? All right. Diane.
This was the Feast of Feasts, since any sacrifice not made at the other festivals could be made at this time. This was the occasion of the reception of the temple offerings. It was a combination of occasion pleasures with the solemn rites of religious worship. Here was a time of racial rejoicing, mingling with sacrifices, Levitical chants, and the solemn blast of the silvery trumpet of the priest. At night, the impressive spectacle of the temple and its pilgrim thrones was brilliantly illuminated by the great candelabras, which burned brightly in the court of the women, as well as the glare of scores of torches standing about the temple courts. The entire city was gaily decorated. except the Roman castle of Antonia, which looked down in grim contrast upon this festive and worshipful scene. And how the Jews did hate this ever-present reminder of the Roman yoke.
You're muted.
So did y'all notice it talked about all of the blood sacrifices of all the different kinds of animals? This is when they sacrifice doves and sheep and oxen and everything they could sacrifice. So this was, if you could think about it, this was kind of a celebration of blood sacrifice. All right. All right. Huh?
That's all.
Yeah. Horrible thought, isn't it? Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yeah, 70 bullocks were sacrificed during the feast, the symbol of the 70 nations of heathendom. The ceremony of the outpouring of the water symbolized the outpouring of the divine spirit. The ceremony of the water followed the sunrise procession of the priest and Levites. The worshipers passed down the steps leading from the court of Israel to the court of the women, while successive blasts were blown upon the silvery trumpets. And then the faithful marched on toward the beautiful gate, which opened upon the court of the Gentiles. Here they turned about to face westward, to repeat their chants, and to continue their march for the symbolic water.
And y'all thought the Catholics were the only ones that had all the ceremonies, didn't you? All right, this is a miniature of the temple, and you notice it's got the Wailing Wall over here. This is what's still standing. All right, in
I wonder where
Jerusalem.
the beautiful gate is.
The beautiful gate, it's in this, I don't think it's in this picture.
The Golden Gate?
Yeah, it's right here.
Oh, Gate
Okay.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's not a big picture though. You can download that picture from the slides and blow it up, and I'm sure you can see it. All right. See, Pam, I think you're up next. Is it big enough for you, Pam?
Yeah.
Okay.
On the last day of the feast, almost 450 priests with a corresponding number of Levites officiated. At daybreak, the pilgrims assembled from all parts of the city, each carrying in the right hand a sheaf of myrtle, willow, and palm branches, while in the left hand, each one carried a branch of the paradise apple, the citron, and the forbidden fruit. These pilgrims divided into three groups from this early morning ceremony. One band remained at the temple to attend the morning sacrifices. Another group marched down below Jerusalem to near Mazah to cut the willow branches for the adornment of the sacrificial altar, while the third group formed a procession to march from the temple behind the water priest, who, to the sound of the silvery trumpets, bore the golden pitcher, which was to contain the symbolic water, out through Ophel to near Siloam, where was located the fountain gate. After the golden pitcher had been filled at the pool of Siloam, the procession marched again, marched back to the temple, entering by way of the water gate and going directly to the court of the priests, where the priest bearing the water pitcher was joined by the priest bearing the wine for the drink offering. These two priests then repaired to the silver funnels leading to the base of the altar and poured the contents of the pitchers therein. The execution of this rite of pouring the wine and the water was the signal for the assassination, no,
The
sorry,
assembled, yeah.
assembled pilgrims to begin the chanting of the Psalms from
113 to 118.
113 to 118 inclusive, in alternation with the Levites. And as they repeated these lines, they would wave their sheaves at the altar, then followed the sacrifices of the day allocate no associated with the repeating of the Psalms of the day. The psalm of the last day of the feast being the 82nd, beginning with the fifth verse.
All right, so y'all now know the whole ceremony there, right?
Well, that
All right.
you go to a service at a Catholic church, and they still do that.
Yeah, pretty much. Only difference is they don't sacrifice live animals
They
anymore,
would if
right?
they could.
They would if they could, probably. You're right. All right, Stephanie, would you take the next one, please?
Five. Sermon of the light of the or on the light of the world. On the evening of the next to the last day of the feast, when the scene was brilliantly illuminated by the lights of the candelabras and the torches, Jesus stood up in the midst of the assembled throng and said,
Okay, Andrew, would you take this one, please?
I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Presuming to place me on trial and assuming to sit as my judges, you declare that if I bear witness of myself, my witness cannot be true. But never can the creature sit in judgment on the creator. Even if I do bear witness about myself, my witness is everlastingly true, for I know whence I came, who I am, and whither I go. You who would kill the Son of Man know not whence I came, who I am, or whither I go. You only judge by the appearances of the flesh. You do not perceive the realities of the spirit. I judge no man, not even my arch enemy. But if I should choose to judge, my judgment will be true and righteous, for I would judge not alone, but in association with my Father, who sent me into the world and who is the source of all true judgment. You even allow that the witness of two reliable persons may be accepted. Well, then, I bear witness of these truths, so also does my Father in heaven. And when I told you this yesterday, in your darkness you asked me, "Where is your Father?" Truly, you know neither me nor my Father, for if you had known me, you would also have known the Father.
Yep.
That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Any way you look at it, this interest couple points here I want to point out. First is the fact that Jesus says that the creature cannot judge the creator. Do you see that there?
Yeah.
Jesus is the creator of our lonely local universe, which makes him God of our local universe. And they do not have the right or the responsibility to sit in judgment of their own creator. And that being, because of his previous bestowals, and this was his seventh bestowal, he basically is justifying his right to lead and rule. Okay. The other thing is the fact that he's saying that even though they run around and swear that God is their father and that sort of thing, they don't really know him. They don't have a personal relationship with him. So what he's telling them is that they're not worthy to try to judge people and tell them who is part of the kingdom of heaven and who is not, right? So that means we have no such right too, also in our lives. So it's a good point to make. All
It's,
right. So
this
if we
is.
really truly know the Father, then we must accept the fact that Jesus is his son. Okay. You go saying something, Andrew?
Yeah, just a question.
Sure.
It's a little tangential, but so the only creators are the 700,000 creator sons,
That's
and
correct.
then they have created their own solar systems, or
No,
I
local
mean,
universe. Each local
okay.
universe will eventually be inhabited by 10 million planets.
So is a local universe what the general public understands as the universe, which is like 100 billion known galaxies, each with 100 billion stars, or is that not a
No,
local universe?
it's
Okay.
smaller than that. Really, see, it's kind of confusing to us because we're on the very edge of the Milky Way.
Yes.
Okay, right out towards the edge. And the local universe of Nebadon includes part of that. And what we see one direction, if we look the opposite direction of the Milky Way, we can actually see the first outer space level. The first outer space level has no inhabited planets, none. And you have to think of, if you think of the Milky Way, okay, as if we accept that's the seventh super universe, the first outer space level has 256 of the equivalent of the size of the Milky Way. You follow me? That's how big these outer space
And
levels are. And that's just
Andrew,
that's the first one.
and what is the local universe? It's the entire Milky Way.
No. Our local universe is one little corner
Of
of
it.
the very edge of the
Okay.
Milky Way.
Okay,
Okay.
okay.
And
Okay.
the Milky Way itself would have 100,000 local universes.
Really?
Yeah. Because each of the seven super universes, if the Milky Way is the seventh super universe, each one of those has 100,000 local universes because there are 700,000 local universes. So that
So,
means if we look at our Milky Way, there is 100,000 creator suns within our local within the Milky Way.
that means the vast majority of the galaxies do not have creator suns or inhabitants.
Yes, that we see, but that's just because of our position in space. See,
Okay.
we have a really unusual situation because we're not only on the edge of the seventh super universe, we're out on the edge of all seven of the seven super universes. So we're way out in no man's land. I think there's only two other planets that's inhabited that's out farther than we are. So that gives you an idea. We're way out there in the middle of nowhere, really.
Thanks.
Okay. Which makes it even interesting because we followed Lucifer into rebellion because of Caligastia. So being we're one of the 37 planets, it makes you wonder if most all the 37 planets are in close proximity to us somewhere, you know? And they're all under quarantine now. But, you know, it's kind of, since you brought the subject up, it's kind of interesting the fact that if there were 37 planets that went into rebellion and any of those 37 planets had the capability of space travel and they rebelled, can you imagine how much of a threat they were to the entire universe?
Oh.
You know? Because if they could travel to space and go to different planets, they could really cause havoc in many, many, many planets, which is probably what they were doing at the time. There's a reason why. Did you get a chance to look at that video I sent you on the Midwayers, Andrew? Okay, look at that too, because it's got something interesting in it. Well, I didn't make that video. Somebody else did. There's another group, which they did really make beautiful videos. But anyway, an interesting point in that video is the fact that the secondary midwayers, one of their job is sentinels around our planet. And it makes it's an interesting point because if we need sentinels around the planet to keep from bad influences coming into our planet, then there must be some issue that caused them to be assigned as sentinels to the planet. You see what I'm saying? So, not everything is hunky dory out in the universe as yet. Okay, until the adjudication is totally done and we have no rebel planets, until that point, there's always a threat of something. Make sense? So we should be grateful that we have the midwayers watching out for us because they will not allow, they're above physical beings, so they won't allow these invading forces to come into our planet. Okay. I also want to mention something else. I know it's in the middle of the meeting, but this comes interesting. I saw a video the other night on YouTube, and it had a humongous UFO that was hovering, and out of this UFO, you could see these dark beings falling down from the UFO down to the planet and disappearing. Okay. And that could only be one of two things, one of which would be Marantia beings coming to the planet for a visit. Okay. Or the other thing they could be is some kind of being that's being assigned to the planet and they're delivering them to the planet. Okay. So, if there's evidence like that out on our own YouTube, you think about all the things that happen in the universe that we don't know about, and there are a ton of them. And let me give y'all a little heads up too. I finished the video on chapter 4 on the thought adjusters 5 minutes before the meeting started. So I'm going to post it first thing in the morning, but it won't go on for 24 hours because I gotta give it 24 hours so it'll get out on the thing that determines on who to send it out to. You got to give it 24 hours. It won't send it out to anybody. So it'll be out not tomorrow, but the next morning it'll be out. It's chapter 4 of the Thought Adjusters. And y'all all need to listen to this because it is a really good chapter on the Thought Adjusters. You'll appreciate listening to it. So anyway,
Cool.
give myself a little advertisement there. Okay. So basically, Jesus is saying here that you do not know me because you do not know the Father. Okay. And if you really knew the Father, you would recognize me as your creator,
Correct.
basically. Right. All right. Let's go on. Let's see. Now I've lost track of who's up.
Thank you, R.
Am I? Okay. I have already told you that I am going away. And that you will seek me and not find me. For where I am going, you cannot come. You who would reject this light are from beneath. That's interesting, isn't it? I am from above. You who prefer to sit in darkness are of this world. I am not of this world. I live in the eternal light of the Father of lights. You have all had abundant opportunity to learn who I am, but you shall not have other evidence confirming the identity of the Son of Man. I am the light of the light, and everyone who deliberately and understanding rejects this saving light shall die in his sins. In other words, he will not go on. That's pretty harsh, isn't it? Much I have to tell you, but you are unable to receive my words. In other words, you won't listen. Okay. Whoever he who sent me is true and faithful. However, he who sent me is true and faithful. My Father loves even the erring children. And in all this that my Father has spoken, I also proclaim to the world. In other words, he came from the Father. He's telling everyone he's from the Father. He created the world, and he is the light of lights of everything in our universe. And if you Deny him, you're denying what? Existence. What do we call that? Lucifer did the same thing. Cosmic insanity, right? What happens to those who are cosmically insane? They start committing iniquity, right? Over time. They get to the end of life and the thought that their guardian angels cannot find anything salvageable for them to go on.
Their
If
soul
nothing
is empty,
salvageable is found within them, what happens to them?
extinguished.
They're extinguished. They cease to exist.
Yeah, there's nothing to work with.
Nothing to work with, right? You rebel against your own reality and your own existence, then there's nothing no one can do for you, and there's no way they can save you. Okay?
Your own choice.
Yeah, and Jesus is just telling us the truth right here. You sit in darkness, you're not of this world. You're not of any world. You're not of any universe. You don't fit in. You're cosmically insane. So those who become cosmically insane gets the life force removed from them, and they won't wake up past this earth. It's just that simple.
Andrew
What's
has a
that?
question.
Huh?
Andrew has a
Yeah,
question.
go ahead, Andrew.
I'm sorry. I feel bad
No, you
derailing
have to
this
yell out,
teaching.
Andrew, because I don't always see all everybody's little picture.
I
It's
don't
no
want to
problem.
derail the reading, but I have, a question from the last slide and from this slide.
Go right ahead. Ask away.
So on the last slide,
Let me go back up here so we
trying to think
know
what triggered
everybody.
my thought.
All right.
It might have been just something you had said, but just the idea of progressive revelation, and this teaching's even in Christianity and other religions, but kind of like we talked about God teaching, Abraham he doesn't need to murder his son, and
Yes.
then transferring to animal sacrifices, and then kind of bring a little farther in the New Testament, we don't need to sacrifice animals,
Yeah.
and just progressive. But not everyone is on this exact linear path, and so
No.
it made me think of the two people, and I just don't know what your ranty followers think of the 66 books in the Bible, so I don't know how it's held. But the two people mentioned in the Old Testament, Enoch and Elijah,
Yeah.
who never died, they just
Right.
walked with God and then were carried up. So
They
that means
fused. That was th thought adjuster fusion.
that.
That's
Okay.
ex if you want to look that up in the book or in one of my meetings, that's exactly what they, when we talk about the thought adjuster fusing with our souls,
Yeah.
okay, that's what that is. That's what happened to Elijah and Enoch.
So
Okay,
it's
go
just
ahead.
very rare and unique, but that's what that is.
Yeah.
And so then on the current slide, the next slide, I mean, this is just the thought, the phrase specifically in the middle where he says, I am the light of life, and everyone who deliberately and with understanding rejects this saving light shall die in his sins. And, I mean, that's one thing that moved me beyond Orthodox Christianity is just becoming friends with so many people that were just loving, beautiful people that love their neighbor as Jesus taught,
Right.
but they just never said the sinner's prayer or had
Right.
communion or blah, blah, blah. And I got to a point where I was like, I think my God, who is a God of love, would at least after they die be present himself fully to them, and that type of person would
Yes.
fully embrace Jesus.
Yeah.
But kind of what it's teaching here is that, if you're not deliberately and with understanding rejecting God, you just don't understand these things. You have all these levels in the mansion worlds to really grasp it fully,
Correct.
right?
That's true.
Correct.
That's a
Okay.
good way to look at it. In other
Okay. Very
words,
true.
the only thing salvation, let me just mention this first. The only thing you have to believe in to be saved is God the Father and your own salvation that you're going to go on. Everything else comes with time. When you wake up in the mansion worlds, there is no friggin' way you're going to get off the first mansion world without recognizing recognizing Michael or Jesus as your creator. Okay? Won't happen, can't happen. They would think you were cosmically insane if you got there and said that, right? That's what we're talking about. But you have to make a conscious choice in this life before you die, whether you plan on going, you believe in going on and you believe in God the Father. You can't avoid that. Okay. So if you die tonight and you never made that conscious choice, you would have to make that conscious choice where? In the mansion world. But if you made it in this life, you will not be resurrected in the mansion worlds. You won't even go on to the mansion worlds. That's total rejection of God.
So, sorry, yeah, I think your wording was a
Yeah,
what
it
strange
was.
is that
Right. Oh,
if
was it? Did I say something
well,
funky? I
just
do
you're
that every now
saying
and then.
if you don't say on this earth that God is your father, you're saying you don't even make it to the first mansion world.
That's right. Yeah, if you don't
So,
believe in a first source and center, you don't have to call him your father or
yeah.
anything like that. You have to believe in an ultimate first source and center and believe you will survive and go on.
So that, I mean, that's the begs the obvious question. Then the people that I know that are good and loving people, they're not usurers, they don't manipulate people or abuse people, they shovel their neighbor's walk, you know, they
Yeah.
do good things their whole life, but they just are a material person. They don't know what God is because they can't see him, talk to him, whatever. You're saying those people aren't going because that doesn't sit well with
No,
me.
that's not what I said.
Oh, okay.
Not yeah, let's make sure we qualify this. The only way that it says in the Urantia book, every human being, while they're on this planet in the mortal form, sooner or later comes the decision of accepting the first source and center, or God, whatever you want to call him, and their own immortality to go on to the mansion worlds. Okay, they have to make that decision. There's no way out of making that decision. They said
So
that.
it's saying that, sorry to interrupt, it's saying that there's no super kind, loving people that have a PhD in science and they've just decided that the Big Bang happened. There's no immaterial universe. And I'm saying that in good faith with my 150 IQ. They're saying no one is going to go through life and die before being confronted with that decision.
Question. That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Doesn't happen, period. The
Okay.
only human beings on the planet that happens to, which may not happen in this life, are those who are mentally defective. Okay? Or those who are not capable of making that mental decision, and then they're treated like children when they get to the mansion world.
Okay.
Okay?
That makes sense.
But if you're not mentally defected and you reject God, that's a final decision. That's what they call it. They don't mince words about it. It says it's a final decision when you reject God the Father. And whatever you want to call him, whether you want to call him the first source and center, whether you want to call him the first anything you can conceive of would be God. You have to accept that fact and the fact of your own salvation. In other words, going on,
And I
right?
mean, that goes along with many verses like the heavens declare the glory of God. Like we just look around and see
Yeah.
creation, and
Yeah.
yes.
Unless you were a total stupid idiot, sooner or later you're going to come to the conclusion that there is a God, number one, and that number two, you want to go on to the next life, right? I mean, unless you're totally stupid, and there's stupid people out there. There's the Walking Dead too. I've done video after video on this. There's a whole group of people that your answer book calls the walking dead. And that's those who have rejected God, made a decision they don't want to go on to the mansion worlds. That's their right under free will. They don't want to go on to the mansion worlds, and the God respects that, and the universe respects that. So when they close their eyes and they go to sleep, they don't ever wake back up again.
But
Okay.
and
that would include atheists.
That would include the atheists. The trouble with atheism is this. When people get to the point where they start to be claimed to be atheists, what is that? That is rejection of God the Father, is it not?
Yeah.
That's a conscious decision to reject God. And if you stick with that conscious decision, you will not wake up in the mansion worlds. I don't care how smart, giving, loving, caring, anything else you are. You do not have anything salvageable for them to work with if you wake up. That's the problem.
So you say if they stick with that decision, so like say hypothetically an atheist like came to the realization that there's a first source and center, and so on and so forth, do they get a second chance?
They might if they didn't, if the universe did not consider their first decision as a final decision. Yeah, they get a second chance. They have mer That's what mercy is about. Even Lucifer, all the angels, all the midwares, all everyone that's taken away and changed to the Father's prison worlds, they have the opportunity to repent right where they are, and they will be reassigned positions to start over again. Not in the same jobs any longer, but they are given mercy to go on. Yeah, Rodney.
I think about the thief on the cross.
Yeah.
He,
Perfect example.
I don't know. He must have had built something up in his soul.
Yeah.
He must have.
Yeah.
Because Jesus promised
Yeah.
he would see him, that he
Yeah.
would go on.
Yeah.
I think the
Did that
class
help
would
any,
really
Andrew?
enjoy it.
Yes. I mean, these are very deep questions with very long discussions, but that was very helpful. And yeah, I mean, it makes sense that people are given opportunity to make a decision. I mean, I spent too much time of my life reading books on apologetics, so I understand the percentage chance of, like, God existing or not existing, and all the arguments, the teleological argument, the ontological argument. So I think you're right that it is a very closed off mind to say for sure. Just how much information in the entire universe do we as an individual know? It doesn't even come close to approaching 1%. So if you can just say confidently, there's no one out there. So I get it. It's just, it's a
If you say
lot.
that, if you're totally into science and you say that, I think you need to have your head examined, myself. I really do, because you cannot have the material without the spiritual. The spiritual and material are integrated. You can't have a material existence and a material universe without the spiritual universe that's always there. They're not separate entities, they're all one entity, right? And the Mirantia is right in the middle of all of it. Okay. And I know it sounds harsh. Sometimes in my videos, I know I've done some videos that it sounds very harsh. This is the way it is. This is the way it is. But that's what the Urantia book teaches. And my videos are exactly what the Urantia book teaches. I try never to go away from that if I possibly can. And when I do, I say, this is my opinion, not the Urantia book, right? Because it's important to know what it says and what it doesn't say. So, anyway, look at it, right? And we're out of time, y'all. So
Oh,
let's,
wow.
we're at 162.53. We'll take it up from there next up. Well, we're actually at 5.4, I believe. Okay, so we'll take it up from there. Let me stop the share and bring up the prayer of acceptance. Oops, wrong.
Um.
Oops, that's not it. Let me try this again. Here we go. Pam, who's up?
Well, I'm looking at my notes. I think I have to revamp because I was out for a bit. And who was it? Stephanie just read. And I think it's me.
Has Andrew had a chance to read? Have you had a chance to read,
Oh, let's do
Andrew?
Andrew.
Okay.
Okay.
And Andrew, if you don't believe any of this, don't read it.
Mean, I think I do.
Okay.
I believe that God is my paradise father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the paradise father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen. And thanks everybody at home that's listening to us. We had quite a few people that listened to our meeting last time, so
Oh, great.
well, that's good. So see everybody on Tuesday, and we'll take it up from here on Tuesday. All
Thank
right.
you, Roger.
You're
Thank
welcome.
you. Love you
Enjoyed it, y'all.
guys.
All right. See y'all then.